As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast, and you will be able to tell from that slightly less energetic introduction that it's just me here today, Alex. Joe and Seb aren't with me. But don't let that worry you. We've replaced the jokes and bonhomie with a little nerdiness. I'm talking to Eric Laurie, who is the head of Academy Performance Analysis at Molder FK, which has recently given us Solskjaer and Haaland and many other things. So we talked to Eric. I talked to Eric about exactly what it is he does there, what academies are like, get a little bit of insight into Solskjaer as well, which is interesting. This is just to remind you as well that for other forms of insight, you can, of course, go to theathletic.com/TIFO, where there is currently a £1 a month offer. That's very exciting. It's about as excited as I get about anything. And so I will leave you. I can't say that. I can't say that I'm going to leave you in the cool hands and the warm embrace of anyone, because it feels wrong. So without further ado, here's me and Eric. So I'm joined now by Eric Laurie, who is the head of Academy Performance Analysis at Molder FK. Eric, hello, how are you?
I'm doing good, Alex. How are you?
Brilliant. Thank you. Yes, very good. Really nice to have you on. I suppose my first question is, what does a head of academy analysis do?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's quite a few different tasks that we have. I work with another guy in the analysis department, so he does quite a lot to help out. Main function is working around video and analysis around the video side. We have five teams in our academy right now, so we provide make sure all the games are being filmed, make sure we do pre-match videos, post-match videos, depending on the level, like mainly for the reserves, and sometimes for the under-16s we might do opposition analysis when that's needed, individual clips, keep a best practice library that can be with our own teams, or I personally prefer, I like to use a lot of professional teams just to show what that might look like, you know, at the highest level. We can take clips from training. This is all whatever the coaches want. It's all between the coaches and me, I guess, what they want. Each coaches want different stuff provided. So I guess that would be, yeah, that's the main function.
And how long have you been at Molder for?
I have been in the club since 2014.
And to what degree has video analysis advanced? Because we've had people on the podcast before where we've talked about the use of data, the use of video, all of these kind of analytics tools that are being built into football now. For example, was there somebody doing your job before you joined, or was it something that came to be part of your role as the club expanded into the use of video? What's the transition been there?
That's a really good question. I'm actually technically the first person to have this role in the club. when I started, more from a coaching background. So I was coaching for the first 3-4 years, and the first team has had a good analysis department for quite a long time. So while I was coaching in the academy, I was really interested in the analysis side. So I would help out with the first team analysis whenever I could. Just, it's a relatively smaller club, so I had a good relationship with those guys, and they would just, let me help out whenever I could, whenever they needed it. So when the academy decided to that it was time to involve some more, we've always recorded our matches and stuff, but get down to the real analysis, started that around maybe 3 seasons ago, I believe.
So when you're doing analysis, are you, for example, you video a reserve game, presumably things like, goals scored and conceded and stuff. But is the coach coming to you and saying, I noticed during this game that we were particularly adept at building down the right-hand side. Can you give me some examples of that? Or is the coach coming to you and saying, I have a general sense that we were a bit weak in midfield. Maybe you can find some examples of instances where you feel, the wrong option was taken or the player wasn't moving into position correctly. How much latitude do you have to build that stuff?
Most of the, everything, like you said, the goals, everything like that is taken out. No questions asked. That's just done. As well as, the game model, which we have for our academy, broken down into different phases of the game. And nothing too extraordinary, but the typical in possession, out of possession phases. Hmm. And then those are all cut and tagged as well. Then after that, then I'll have that discussion like you described with the coach, and that just depends on the coach. Each one has a different thoughts, different what they might want, as well as what level they're working at, what is more appropriate for that level. Just like you said, can you find specific examples of this? And since I have everything already done, then I'll just go through and take out those clips, or sometimes maybe they'll want to watch the game back with me, and then we can just discuss what they saw compared to what I saw. The under 16 team is, I'm actually with the assistant, one of the assistants on that team, so that's a bit easier, as I know I'm in all the planning for matches and trainings there, so it's a bit easier to take stuff out. But it's really important to have a relatively good relationship with each of the coaches, just knowing how they're looking at the game, and over time it's build a little more trust with them, and then they trust me to take out what they want, and then it makes things a lot easier that way.
Yeah, because it's one of the things that I've heard said by people that work in the various strands of analytics, that the tools are quite advanced, the capabilities are strong, but actually the real battle is, I guess, getting buy-in from the quote-unquote football side. And I suppose that it's a little different if you're talking about video analysis, because as a coach as well, you are part of the football side, and it's probably something that refers a little bit more to the use of these tools for scouting and player acquisition. But I'm guessing that what's really crucial is that kind of intuitive understanding that you would develop with a coach around a particular system of play. And I guess if Mulder has a general dynamic style of play that they want to institute, that does make it easier. But are there coaches who kind of see this stuff as, oh, that's the newfangled, yeah, of course, okay, everyone's got to have video, but it's not really their bag? Or have you noticed that, generally speaking, clubs are moving towards hiring coaches that appreciate the use of this sort of material and see its value?
I've been pretty lucky, I guess, as far as that goes. All the coaches that I'm working with are, maybe the first year was a bit more of a struggle, because nobody really knew exactly what we could do with it all the time, or what I had to offer. So there was times where I've made something that I thought could be useful, and they look at it, and it's just maybe not what's useful to them. They don't, they might look at it and enjoy it, but that's where it ends. They don't want to show it to the team or something. So there was a lot of tests and trials as far as that goes. But after a few years and working with most of the same coaches, we've gotten a pretty good understanding to this point of what they're going to want after each game and before each game, and all the coaches I'm working with now are pretty into it as far as the video side goes.
What about individual players? Because I assume working in the academy system, you know, obviously you're dealing with the younger players at the squad or in the squad. Are they more receptive to that? Is there almost now, because of an awareness of how football operates generally, that actually when they come into an academy, this is going to be part of what they do, as opposed to maybe some of the older players in the first team who still feel that it's not maybe as necessary as you know, some people make it out to be? Do the newer guys fully embrace it and expect it?
I think that is mainly depends more on the individual person. I think they understand it's required. You know, we're gonna use video whether they like it or not, and it's just kind of up to them what they want to take from it. There's quite a few players. The more we get into it, and the better, you know, software we have, and the better sharing platforms we have, that the players, they get into it a lot more, and they have the ability to take out their own clips and stuff. So if we, you know, it's easy to just take everything out for them from game to game, but it's also, you know, I've started to implement a little more player side analysis where they can take stuff out themselves and show it to us instead of us always showing them clips. But just, you know, part
so
of
that,
the job.
So they have access to the database as well then?
Yes, that's correct.
That's interesting. And in terms of that stuff, are they, I don't know, are they trying to pick things to make themselves look better, or are they coming to, I guess if you're encouraging players to do that, there might be a temptation for those players to be highlighting all of the good things and not necessarily delving into the stuff that they're not quite as competent at. But, or do you find that players are actually pretty honest about that stuff?
Working with the players at the academy level, they all want to get better, so you don't find them cheating themselves too often. So plus we have to give some restrictions, you know, it's not always just, you know, find the best goals or best passes you had this match, but, you know, find a situation where you think you could have done better and why you could have done better, and they'll come to us with the appropriate clips in those situations. Yeah.
And how much time would you expect an academy player to spend looking at video of themselves? I mean, I don't know, say for example a reserve team player, presumably they're full-time and they're training regularly and all the rest of it. Is video given, you know, half an hour a day or a couple of hours a week, or how does it work out?
I would say we're still down to, you know, just preference of the players, who make it available for them, and it's more what they want to do with it in their free time. Of course, we're always going to have video before trainings or before matches or after matches, or, you know, when we have, for example, like individual player meetings, we'll have some video of it, of just them as well, or some team stuff. But outside of that, you know, some players are going to watch every game back and they want all their clips and watch themselves back. And some of them, you know, they're just not that interested in it. But they could still be some of the better players. It just depends on how they want to spend their time. But that's not something we really enforce right now. It's just kind of down to their own preference outside of what we're going to go through with them.
Interesting. So in terms of you personally then, you said before that you were a coach and then the club created this role and you applied to it. What skills did you, I mean, I assume you had some sort of coaching qualification beforehand, but did you then have to teach yourself a load of stuff with, you know, video editing and so on? Was it learn on the job? Was there, you know, what was that process like?
As far as the IT side goes, I wouldn't say I'm super great with the IT stuff. So there was a lot of learning on the job, a lot of teaching myself. It's easy to cut the videos once you have the right software, but then putting that together and finding a good presentable way to present it instead of just, you know, throwing it up in a MP4 file or something like that. You have to always trying something new, and you know, there's lots of different analysis courses you can find out there. That I've probably gone through 5, 6, 7 different courses in the last few years, just trying to, you know, always take something small here from there to add to your daily work. So that a lot of stuff like that. But like I said, before I had this specific role, I was doing a bit helping with the first team. So I had some understanding of what they do with their videos and how they present it and stuff like that.
Is there a particular kind of way that most footballers are receptive to information? Is it, I don't know, do things need to be kept relatively short? Do you use lots of colour or, you know, arrows? So I have access to Y Scout, which is, you know, has the option to kind of draw over the top of footage and stuff, and it's
right.
Yeah, it's pretty reasonable. It's not that sophisticated. Are you using that sort of level of stuff with the players, where you're pausing it, you're drawing arrows, you're making it really, really clear for them, or do some players just basically need to see a clip once and go, okay, yeah, I get the point of that?
I would say it's a bit of both, and I guess that's on purpose. You know, I don't want things to get too repetitive. I don't want to, you know, sit down and show them 10 minutes worth of clips with arrows on it every single time, but I also don't want to just show them 2 minutes worth of, you know, quick 6 second clips either. So try to get a balance between that, you know, depending on the situation. For example, if it's a pre-match video, a little more arrows just to be a little more specific, a little more drawings and showing spaces. But then if it's you know, if we're gonna have something before training, if we're depending on what we're working on that day, what phase we're in that week or something, it can be maybe a little more generic, a little more general, just to create some discussion so they can see, they can come with their own ideas, find their own spaces, tell us what's happening, instead of just putting, you know, the arrow on every drawing and every space.
So in terms of the structure then, let's say you're you know, there's a training session planned for Wednesday. Is the head of the academy coming to you and saying, right, the training session this week is going to be on X, so can you provide some stuff for us? Or who are you working into? What's the kind of, because I guess academy structures vary considerably from club to club. So what's yours like, and what's the process of working within that?
We have an academy game model that all the coaches understand quite well, in a 6 week cycle that we all go through. We're all on the same week each time, so everybody knows, you know, what we're working on, where we're at, and as far as what video is going to be provided, it's based off that and what they're working on. So that's comes down back to me and the individual relationships with each coach. So it's just to discuss with them one-on-one, or, you know, me with the coaching staff of that team, what they want and when they want it. And it's just there's really no blueprint for exactly when and how it's going to be done. So there's a lot, you have to be ready to adapt and flexible, because one week they might want this and one week they might want something else. So just to have that relationship with the coach and see what they want for that week. But it's a general understanding based on our coaching model, what's coming for each week.
And what are the differences between how the first team does stuff and how the academy does stuff? Is the first team just much more focused on opposition preparation and tweaks, whereas the academy stuff is more general and kind of grounded in the game model? Or is there actually a fair degree of consistency across those?
I would say probably the first team level, they definitely have a lot more opposition. They also might make more adjustments based on opposition as well. But it's when in the academy side, we're focused more on the developing of the players and developing of the, you know, the like you said, the game model that we're working with. So it doesn't always have to come down to, you know, how we're going to win this game, but just, you know, how are we going to develop this phase of the game against this opponent? You know, how do we want to go against, how do we want to work on, you know, whatever phase we're on that week, and how we're going to prepare that way.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
Obviously, winning games is really important, right? You know, everybody who plays football or coaches football wants to win games. But is the focus on the academy more in terms of the overall development of a playing style, player mentality, ensuring that players are receptive to instructions, that kind of stuff? Or are you is it very win focused and more kind of short term? I'm assuming it's the former, because the purpose of an academy is ultimately to produce players that go on to the first team, right? But what's the mentality behind trying to achieve that?
I would definitely say the first part, our focus is to develop players, but at the same time, you know, if you're trying to develop a player who is going to be competing in the first team level in 2, 3, 4 years, they also have to learn how to win. But the definite focus is on individual player development, probably over team as well.
So if you get a player, say, who's particularly receptive to video, is constantly kind of coming to you and saying, oh, can we go through this? Can we go through that? Are you passing that on to a coach as being a good sign that that player is potentially, I don't want to say more intelligent, but more engaged in processes other than the technical aspect of the game? Is that something that coaches are looking for, you know, players who are keen to kind of develop in that way and use those additional tools?
Yeah, we definitely have some players that are more receptive to it and, you know, more interested in it. Like I said, we can give some assignments from time to time, and there'll be more, some players, you know, they can come with their clips and they'll have 8, 9, 10 comments per 1 10-second clip, and some other player might have you know, just one comment here and there, but it's just down to the player. Yeah, everyone learns differently, so there's no expectations as far as how they want their analysis or how they want to do it. But of course, anytime a player wants more and is receptive to that, it's of course, you know, fun for a coach to work with that as well. So that's definitely important, but it's not an expectation, no. It's more of a extra addition bonus, I guess.
When we talked via email briefly before this conversation, and you pointed out that Mulder's quite a small town, and that the player recruitment for the academy takes place largely within that area. I suppose a lot of our listeners will be most familiar with English models, where, you know, the catchment areas are larger, a lot of the towns and cities are larger, and also I suppose to a degree that I don't want to say there's more poaching of players between academies and so on, but I don't know if that happens in Norway. But what are the differences with the Norwegian system, how the catchment areas work, that kind of thing, to the UK system?
From my understanding, I could be wrong, but my understanding from the UK academy system, there is, like you said, a lot of poaching and fighting over players. But in Norway, the recruitment is fairly based on location. You know, if there's one player in another area, you just kind of, for the most part, respect. They don't belong to the big club in their area. They have their grassroots clubs, and it's not just hands off. It's that player, I guess. But for the most part, players stay within their region, you know, the big club in their region, their area. But of course, there can be players who, you know, maybe grow up liking a different club, or maybe the club in their specific region isn't up to their standards or expectations. So there'll always be some players who are maybe looking for a little different offer than what they have. But it's pretty much just recruiting from your own county or whatever you want to call it, region, area.
And do the small clubs, that I'm guessing these are sort of local, like village or town teams, do they act as kind of like feeders? So are their coaches saying, we've got this 14-year-old and he's really, really good, you should come and have a look at him? Or are you still going out and scouting those matches?
It's a little bit of both. We have different groups where we gather these types of players that you're, you know, maybe the top players from each of these local clubs that, like you mentioned, and we have trainings with them. So that's one way to find them. And of course, there's also some of the coaches who like to go out and watch the local matches as well and see what, you know, their own eye tests instead of just what the coaches are saying. So it's a bit of both as far as the recruitment goes that way.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Erling Braut Haaland at the moment is doing extremely well for Dortmund. There are other Norwegian players out there attracting attention. There's sort of potentially, you know, in the next couple of years, Norway can start to punch a little bit above its weight in terms of size in football. Do you think something has happened in the academy system across the country to produce a particularly good generation of players? Or do you think it's always the case that, you know, that these things ebb and flow, and sometimes there's two or three really, really good ones that go off to big clubs, and sometimes there's not, and it's sort of more chance-based than that?
Well, that's a good question. I think I might have to take the easy way out on this one. Again, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't have a great deal of knowledge of the academy system from, you know, pre-2013-14, how that was set up, but I do have the feeling and the relative understanding that the academy systems over the last 10 years in Norway have, you know, really, really improved over what they used to have. Not even really sure there was what you would call an academy 10 years ago for most of the clubs at that, you know, the top level. Of course, they have youth teams and stuff, but just the way that they deal with the players and the way they develop them it's definitely taken some huge strides in the last 5 to 10 years, I would say. But at the same time, like the players you mentioned, there's not always going to be a new hole on the coming every other year.
I think for defenders everywhere, that's probably a good thing. So by that, I guess what you mean is that when we refer to academy, what we're talking about is not simply a youth team or a collection of youth teams, that it's a particular structure that sits over that collection of teams, that it implies a degree of organization, process, support, those kinds of things, rather than just a loose affiliation of, you know, some teams of age groups that happen to wear the same kit.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty good way to define it. You know, we have lots of different organization and structure behind everything that we do, and controlling the players' workload and, you know, dealing with injuries perhaps a little better than a non-academy team might do. You know, it's like the analysis side, what we can offer there. And so there's just, like you said, a little more structure and, you know, a lot of the local grassroots clubs, you know, they don't want to take anything away from them because that's where most of our players come from. So they're obviously doing a great job preparing them to come to the academy. So they do a lot of great work in those places as well, but like just a little more structure and definition of how we want to develop the players, I suppose, in the academy.
So obviously a huge amount of effort and work has gone into the academy at Molde. Is that seeing results now? And I suppose in terms of a measure of success, clearly progressing players through the academy to the reserves, to the first team is one measure of success. But what other measures of success do you see?
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of success in our academy lately, I would say. We have the Norwegian governing body of football has implemented, an academy rating system in the last few years, where we've consistently rated quite high in Molde. So that's one measure of success, I guess you would say. As far as developing players, it's not always easy to go into the first team, but at the same time, I would say it's a success. You know, maybe they're not in our first team, but they're in other first teams across the, you know, the top two, three tiers of Norwegian football. It's one way to measure it. We have quite a few players who have came from the academy in the last 3-4 years who are playing in the top level, the second level, and you know, even outside of the country as well. For example, our under 16 team right now, we have 4 players in the under 15 and under 16 national teams. So another way I guess you could measure success is by getting players into their age group in the national team. So it's not always easy to go from the academy to the first team when the first team is competing at the top of the table every single year, trying to compete in Europa League, trying to get in the Champions League. So that's a big step from the reserve team to Europa League, and that's a pretty big step to take. So it's not always that easy.
No, there's always a practicality, isn't there? And I think, you know, people can be very... I think it's always nice for clubs when they have academy players or youth team products coming through. But I also think it's probably difficult for people outside of the clubs to recognize, like you say, just what a huge step it is up from playing reserve team football to being expected to take part in a Europa League match. You know, people get romantic about it, don't they? And they think, oh, you know, it'd be great if half our team was staffed by youth products who grew up within a stone's throw of the stadium and all of that stuff. But it's great if that can happen. But like you say, if you're Mulder and you're one of, you know, a few pretty dominant clubs within the domestic setup, that is going to be more of a difficult jump up because of the expectations around it. I was going to ask you briefly, obviously, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was manager of Mulder while you were there, or because you're still there, but he's no longer. And he's somebody who has brought young players in at United. Did you find that there was, you know, was he somebody who was particularly interested in academy development and what was happening, perhaps as a sort of younger former player himself?
Yeah, I definitely think you could compare a lot of what he's done at United to his time in Mulder. He was really he was eager to bring up youth players and give them a chance whenever he felt that, you know, of course you have to deserve it and be ready, but he wasn't afraid to use youth players in his time in Mulder. I mean, obviously Erling Haaland was here while Solskjaer was here as well, and he was giving him matches in the first team when he was 17, 18, I think it was. So
do you think there's a certain kind of manager that is more interested in that there's a sort of, you know, some managers are looking at the club as a more holistic enterprise, that the academy and everything is very much part of that, and they're across everything that's happening? I'm thinking of people as well as Solskjaer, people like Klopp and Bielsa, who are quite well known for, you know, Bielsa particularly is regularly at sort of academy level games and keeping an eye on stuff. Do you think that there's a type of managers who do that and that there are benefits to it, and then there's a type who are just, you know, I've got to come in, I'm working with the first team, I have to win games, you know, maybe a slightly more, I don't want to say short-termist approach, perhaps?
Yeah, I would definitely say there's different types of managers in that regard, but I think a lot of that also might come from the very top, even above the manager. You know, some clubs, I don't have a specific example in off the top of my head, but some clubs, you know, require a certain amount of, you know, local academy products in their first team squad. You know, how many of those they're going to have. So that kind of starts above the manager sometimes, but I would definitely say there's definitely managers who prefer a bit of a local flavor in their side compared to others, yeah.
So we're going to see more Mason Greenwoods at Manchester United then?
That's definitely a possibility. Hopefully there's some more. If they have some more of him coming through, then that's good for them.
That is definitely good for them. So in terms of you, what are your, I suppose, your aspirations, your goals moving forwards? You know, do you think that there's a route for you to transition into sort of first team level management, or is there like a separate kind of analysis pathway that where you work at different clubs, that kind of thing? What's your aim?
That's a tough question. It's working in a football club, things can change pretty quickly. I actually, when I came to Mulder, I started as a keeper coach, Then I transitioned to more of an assistant type of coach, and then into the analysis side. So things change pretty quickly. So I wouldn't necessarily say I have a clear direction in which I see myself heading. But like I said, I've been in Molde for 6 years now, and enjoyed the whole time here. So for now, I'm just completely happy working in Molde. So I don't want to go too much farther past that for now.
That's a wonderfully diplomatic answer that bodes well for a career in coaching wherever you go. Well, thank you very much for your time, Eric. Really, really appreciate that. There will be more from the TIFO Football Podcast next week, or possibly in the next few days, about something. As usual, we're as chaotic on that as ever. But thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on, Alex. It was always enjoyable to chat a bit about football. So thanks for having me on.